Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a brief but annoying message to let you know that you could have first heard this episode 9 months ago if you were a subscriber to our Iron Filing Society Patreon offering.
For the price of a pint and a St. Clement's each month, you can get up to 4 episodes a week, 9 months before the rest of the world gets them. Early access to regular episodes, lots of other marvellous benefits, and there's absolutely no adverts or brief but annoying messages like this that'll get right on your tics.
Find out more and subscribe now at tftimemachine.com/ironfilings.
Here we go, here we go, here we go, here we go, this is it!
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I am Andy Hotbody Dawson. Pow, pow, pow!
I'm Sam Nifty Delaney, so what?
It's the Turpin Odyssey. We're looking at the ITV series Dick Turpin, which I think we've agreed is the greatest Saturday tea time TV show there ever was.
Yeah.
And it's up against some stiff competition in the likes of Dukes of Hazzard. Which Metal. I saw a parallel with the Dukes of Hazzard.
It's up against Metal Mickey.
We're look at. Metal Mickey, I was going to mention just then. Yeah, Metal Mickey.
Wurzel Gummidge.
Wurzel Gummidge. Good one.
And the A-Team.
And the A-Team. And many Knight Rider. Many others.
I think Knight Rider was on in the week.
I think the A-Team was a Friday night if we're going to split hairs.
I thought, no. The A-Team was Saturday tea time classic,
well,
wasn't it?
They were probably moved around. They were probably moved around the schedules, you know, as they went along.
Do you remember a show called Bring 'Em Back Alive? And it was about, I think it was about someone who saved animals and also fought poachers. And it's one of those shows that I'm sort of started to think it was sort of hanging around in the, like, you know, right in the back room of my memory, and
yeah.
I was starting to think I imagined it, because I'm sure at one stage I even googled it and couldn't find it, and I was thinking, shit, did I imagine this? But I'm pretty sure that was on Friday nights just before, or I think after Play Your Cards Right, which was my favourite Friday night viewing.
I don't remember it, but I'm looking and
have
it's
you found
there.
It
It's there, yeah. It was 1982.
Yeah. What did it say it was about?
It was an adventurer called Frank Buck, played by Bruce Boxleitner.
Yeah.
And Bring 'Em Back Alive was the motto of the adventurer Frank Buck, a legendary guide and collector of wild animals. He captured them alive to be brought back to zoos in Malaya during the years immediately before World War II, and he operated out of the Raffles Hotel bar in Singapore. This is fucking improbable.
Amazing guy.
I remember this.
Yeah, I mean, he wouldn't be a hero now. I think it was influenced probably by the success of Indiana Jones, because I'm pretty sure he had a hat as well.
Yeah, he does. There's a bit of that in it, yeah.
Yeah, because Indiana Jones, I think, came out around the same time, and they thought,
it's
got strong Glenn A. Larson vibes around it.
I wonder.
I wonder if our old friend Glenn A. Larson is behind this show.
It was actually the executive producer. It wasn't Glenn A. Larson. It was actually Larry A. Thompson.
Oh, okay. Wonder if they were pals or whether they were rivals.
Is that an alias, maybe?
Yeah.
Glenn A. Larson.
Yeah, I've got to go to ground because I'm in a bit of trouble legally and physically with James Garner at the moment.
Yeah, I think high for him. I
don't know if you heard, but he puts me through a caravan. So I've had to change my identity for a little bit in order to carry on producing fucking knockout show formats.
No, Larry A. Thompson didn't do all that much. He did some TV movies, like one-off things. Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer. He did, I can't see any series that I remember.
Here's another show that I've been meaning to ask you about that I feel very confident you will have strong opinions on. Because I was thinking, I'm going to start watching The Sweeney from the beginning. Might be diveable, might be not. Don't know. But I just want to, just for my own pleasure and leisure.
It's very watchable. It's on ITV4 most days.
It's on the whole thing is on Amazon for free.
Wow.
If you're on Amazon Prime, right? So I thought, to be honest, when I was a kid, in the 80s, it was already sort of old. It was repeats because it had been from the 70s. And it would be on late. And in my child mind, I was obviously obsessed with Minder. I thought Minder was like the best show that there was. Yeah. And when it came on, in my child mind, I thought, it's like Minder, except it's not got any funny bits, right? Because that's, as a child, when you were like eight, how you'd perceive it. Like, Minder was fighting plus loads of jokes. Whereas the Sweeney, he had the same guy, but it just seemed to be just without fighting. The jokes.
Yeah.
So I wasn't that interested. But now I think, I need to go back and watch the Sweeney from the beginning. But while I was doing a bit of Sweeney research, it said due to its huge popularity, the BBC tried to hit back with its own version of the Sweeney. Target,
yeah. I do remember that. Who was in that now?
Well, he's quite a famous actor. I'm trying to remember his name because
Hazel, was it?
No. It's basically the guy. You'll recognise his name and his face straight away.
I've just looked it up.
Yeah. Patrick Moore. Who's got like one of those faces that's just sort of synonymous with the 70s. He's got a 70s face.
He definitely has.
He's got a face that could only have existed in the 70s, right?
Who did I think it was? I've just forgotten who
something
I just said.
Something Hazel.
Oh, yeah, Nicholas Hazel. He's kind of like a cut from the same cloth as Patrick Moore.
I can't remember who Nicholas Hazel is. I'll look him up. But, not unlike what's his name from the Confessions films as well. He's got a 70s face, hasn't he?
Nicholas Ball played Hazel. That's what it was. Yeah, Hazel was the thing that Terry Venables co-wrote, wasn't it?
I think you're right, yeah.
Anyway, we're getting a bit...
Who was Shoestring then, mate?
Shoestring, that was Eddie Shoestring. That was Trevor Eve.
Yeah, Trevor Eve.
He was another loner detective. Nicholas Ball, who played Hazel, which was written by Terry Venables, we think, was married to Pamela Stevenson from 1978.
Before Billy Connolly.
Until her affair and eventual elopement with Billy Connolly.
Fucking hell. Oh. Well,
he was cuckolded by Connolly.
Bloody hell.
That's Ball. Hard to get over that.
But Target, while I was reading about the Sweeney, they kept bringing up Target as if that was a big part of the Sweeney story. Well, of course, the BBC tried to hit back with Target. And I thought, fucking hell, Wikipedia are giving quite a lot of exposure to Target in this article that's supposed to be about the Sweeney. So I was drawn to Target then. And Target was launched as a direct competitor. But in the end, the BBC cancelled it after just two series. The reason? Too violent.
Too violent.
Tyler, they'd taken the Sweeney and they said, what if we... And this is the BBC, mind you, right? Mm-hmm. This is old Biddy Baxter and fucking Marmaduke Hussey, right?
Mm-hmm.
The grandees of broadcasting in the era, they've gone... Well, if we took the fucking ICV and knocking it out of the park with the Sweeney, they've got us running for the hills here. We've got to hit back. Who's got some ideas? You, Biddy. What have you got? What about the Sweeney? Set more violent. Well, I don't know. The Sweeney's the most violent show on TV. I know. Well, let's just fucking hit back.
It's not it's the most violent, but it's not. You know, maximum violence.
Not maximum violence.
More violence.
You know, I have repeatedly come to you and pitched the idea of making Blue Peter more violent. And you have repeatedly said, no way, it's pre-Watershed. Well, this show, as I understand it, is going to be later in the schedules. So let's just make it, take all the violence ideas that you rejected for Blue Peter and put them in this show instead.
You did say, Biddy, that you did want to have violence in Blue Peter, but you felt it would betray the audience. Now, here is an outlet for you to let off all that steam you've been building up in the editor's chair of Blue Peter.
Because we're going to attract the sort of audience, those cunts who watch fucking ITV, the commoners, right? We're going to get them over, and it will not betray that audience, I tell you, because all they fucking respond to is a good bit of violence.
We'll give them what they want, more violence.
And so after just two series, it had some sort of record number of complaints from old Barbara Woodhouse and her mob.
Not Mary Whitehouse. Barbara Woodhouse was the dog trainer.
No, it was Barbara Woodhouse. She didn't like it either.
She didn't like it either. She was one of the people that complained, and Mary Whitehouse as well.
I always got them confused. They were similar characters, weren't they?
They were. They look quite similar, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they both wore spectacles.
Spectacle-wearing, fearsome matriarchs of the 70s and 80s. Then the Queen, Thatcher. Fucking hell. What a gang.
Going around in a van solving mysteries.
Yeah.
It's too much violence, two seasons.
So, Target's another thing that's worthy of our attentions.
I remember its existence, but I don't think I ever watched it. It was 77 and 78.
Understand why instinctively thought Dawson will be all over this. I bet he owns a DVD box set of Target and the soundtrack on vinyl.
Not yet.
I've really been so shocked than I am now by your relative ignorance of Target.
It was, they received 5,000 letters of complaint from Mary Whitehouse's League of Light, which was the organisation. She wasn't just a one-woman campaigner. She had this group
She had a whole mob.
A mob of fucking winged.
But you know what? There's been a lot of revisionism on Mary Whitehouse in recent years, because if you look at the things that she objected to, at the time everyone was like, bit uptight, whereas now they're the sort of things that we, like, you know, most right-minded people are in agreement. There is fucking too much of, both on our televisions and just in popular culture.
Right.
Like the dehumanisation of sex is what I'm talking about specifically.
Right. Yeah. They took the love out of it. They made it into
the prevalence of pornography and the effect that would have. Like the desensitisation of young people to pornography is something that she foresaw. And everyone else scoffed at and said that she was just uptight. And now everyone's like, fuck's sake, young people now think porn is real. And we've got an epidemic of people who just think that, you know, sex is like you see it on the internet. And
so
that's
problematic. Mary Whitehouse, you think she foresaw the internet and sort of tried to...
She foresaw the issues that the internet have exacerbated. She thought it'd just be TV. She didn't know TV was going to go on computers as well, which is basically what the internet is.
Telephones in your pocket that you carry around.
And you can watch fucking on while you're just waiting for a bus.
On the train.
Jesus Christ.
But anyway,
forget all of that. I would say that if this show Target had 5,000 complaints, it must
really
be
good.
Fucking amazing. And we have to watch it. I just need to find it. Let's go on Just Watch and find out where it is.
This is on Wikipedia. 5,000 letters. And its release also coincided with the publication of the Belson Report. B-E-L-S-O-N. And
the Belenger
in brackets, was television violence and the adolescent boy. That's what that report was
about.
There
you go, mate. This
is a deep dive that report.
Yeah. That, I mean, these are big
this
problems.
This football podcast, we're going to deep dive a 1977 report about television violence and the adolescent boy. That's where we're headed.
I can't find Target on Just Watch, mate.
It's not on there, is it not? It's been wiped from the archives. The first series was curtailed and the second series toned down.
And then they were going to bring it back for a third series without Patrick Mauer, and they asked James Boland to take on the lead role. And James Boland said, I would love to see James Boland in a hyper-violent role, as a hyper-violent cop, wouldn't you? He'd be great at that.
Definitely.
But apparently he turned it down because he still had commitments to When the Boat Comes In, have a little fishy on a little dishy.
That was massive at the time, of course. Mm. Some of the episodes in Series 1, Hackett, who, of course, was played by Patrick Moore.
Mm. Hackett, I thought he was called John Target, Patrick Moore.
John Target.
This has thrown me completely.
So John Target. Mm. Hackett follows up on information about dodgy dealings aboard an international cargo ship provided by a murdered snitch.
Yes! Yay.
Episode 2. Hackett is baffled by a series of jewel thefts and turns to a prisoner awaiting release for help. Another snitch. Episode 3. A sailor tries to sell a package of stolen drugs he believes to be hashish, but is actually heroin. That episode's called Big Elephant.
Really? Fucking hell.
We should as well mention that it was set in Southampton, so it was kind of docks-based.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. Where are we going to set? We're going up against the Sweeney. We've got to get something hard-nosed, gritty, and more shocking than even the Sweeney. Where are we going to set it? Well, Sweeney's in London, so we try somewhere else. Well, what are we thinking? Glasgow? Belfast? Manchester? No. Southampton.
Southampton.
A town perched on the Hampshire coast, just opposite the Isle of Wight. Are you fucking sure? That sounds like one of the softest fucking towns in Britain, eh?
They'll be like, hey, they Southampton won the FA Cup last year. They're on the up. They've got Laurie McMenemy at the helm.
They got Keegan now, or at least they hear he's on his way. Something to do with a light fitting.
Episode 6. Hackett quits the force in disgrace after being accused of accepting a bribe. He arranges to sell police files to people traffickers to pay for his enforced retirement.
Fucking hell. Jesus that sounds Christ. A lot like the maddest, I think the maddest cop show I've seen is the Shield. Yeah. Have I talked to you about Shield? It's like the American show from the noughties. And the cops in that, like, they're fucking next level. Like, you can't believe the stunts they pull in the pursuit of their own profit and self-preservation. And it's brilliant. The lead character is called Vic Mackey. Sort of like it's a bit like a Tony Soprano type figure, although he's a cop. And that storyline that you just said is exactly the sort of shit. The Shield probably nicked it all off target.
Jalapeño.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jalapeño.
Series 2, episode 1 of series 2, you can kind of see where it's been torn down a bit, because the synopsis is this. Hackett investigates the curious theft of rare old paintings from wealthy homes.
Lovejoy.
Fuck Target up and finds a dedicated young woman determined to advance the careers of several young artists. Oh, fuck off.
Fucking hell. Like, can you imagine? You can't go that way with a show. You can ramp it up. You can't ramp a show down. Whoever's watched Target Series 1, as like the people who liked it would have thought, this is fucking knockout. It's mental.
Yeah.
Right? He's always dealing with dodgy snitches and fucking drug smugglers, and he's beating the shit out of people. It's awesome. And then suddenly it's like stolen paintings, and you think, what?
It's like
no one's going to go, oh, I didn't like it before, but I like it now that it's become, that it's had its fucking balls chopped off.
It's almost like a dry run for Lovejoy, which is all right. Lovejoy's great in its own way.
But it doesn't pretend to be anything it's not. Does it?
It does get back on track again, because the final episode in the series, Hackett uses an accountant to get evidence against a porn publisher who's buying drugs with smuggled gold.
that sounds decent.
That's good.
That's the sort of storyline we can get behind.
I wonder if any episodes on YouTube.
Yeah. Target.
We will need to find out more about this. Target BBC.
I think we really need to just basically bring Target back into the public consciousness.
Lots of episodes on YouTube.
Love it.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, we might, who knows, we might just deep dive or history box one episode of it.
Yeah.
Just to sort of bring it back to the attention, just for our own curiosity.
Yeah, we'll choose the one.
Sounds like it's got a huge amount of potential.
We should possibly go back to Dick Turpin at this point.
Well, it's worth it because this is a really good episode, mate.
Well, it's not going to get dealt with in this episode. It's going to be at least a two-parter.
Right.
The synopsis, it's episode 6. It's called The Blacksmith. I'm not sure if it's on YouTube. It is definitely on Daily Motion, and we'll try and tweet out the link again, which I forgot the name of the fellow. Was it Magical Jim?
He's an amazing bloke. Electric Terry, wasn't it? Jim.
No, it was Jim something or other. We'll call him Magical Jim.
Okay.
Who's put all the episodes of Dick Turpin into his Google Drive file for people to look at.
And it's in great quality. I used his episode today for this one. And,
me too.
It was a great watching experience. So thanks, Magical Jim.
You could literally go through his hard drive.
Yeah.
And look at his Dick Turpin. So this is called The Blacksmith. And it says Dick decides to fetch some of the loot his friend Sam Morgan, the blacksmith, has been keeping safe for him. Unfortunately, Morgan has just been captured by Spiker. Their first attempt at rescuing the blacksmith only results in freeing an old scoundrel called Isaac Ragg. Therefore, Dick decides to take a hostage of his own. Drum roll. Drrr, Sir John Glutton.
Yes.
Yes, Dick.
Dick. Dick's balls get bigger with each episode, don't they?
Huge balls. Huge balls. Massive. This week. Without balls of iron, without wishing to jump forward to the scene itself, there's a scene in this which is similar to Pacino and De Niro in Heat, where they come face to face for the first time in that diner between Dick and Sir John Glutton. And again, it's this show influencing Hollywood, I believe. We've already seen it influencing Raging Bull and other stuff. Might be Metal Mickey. But, that's coming up. It's another episode that's directed by the mighty Charles Crichton.
Yeah.
Who, of course, did loads of Ealing comedies and, of course, did A Fish Called Wanda. It kicks off. Spiker is leading a team of men on horseback to a place. We don't know where it is. Turns out it is the blacksmith's workshop, I think you'd call it, and they're there to arrest the blacksmith, who, of course, is Sam Morgan. And Morgan puts up a struggle, but there's too many of them. They overpower him and take him, and they then start searching his premises for stuff.
We believe there is stuff here, Morgan.
Yeah. Where is the stuff? Lead us to all of the stuff. Shiny stuff.
You're a stuff man, we hear. You're more than just a blacksmith. You're a stuff man, handler of stuff.
Have you stuffed the stuff?
And we find out later on. It's very ingenious. Cut to Dick and Swiftnick, who was sitting around waiting by the side of the road in the woods, waiting to do some robbery.
Yeah.
Lots of sitting about going on with these two, isn't there?
Yeah, but that's their life. That's the life they've chosen.
Yeah,
I like to think it's not dissimilar to ours. Like they sat about, relaxing, having a laugh, thinking about things. And then once in a while, they went into action and robbed. And that's just like us. We sit about, doing a bit of thinking, relaxing, pottering watching about. The and then, all of a sudden, bang, pod, pod, pod.
Podcast.
And then we just go back to our relaxing.
Yeah, we're exactly the same.
Mm.
Dick says that there used to be dozens of coaches down this road, and he wonders what's happened to them all. And Swiftnick informs him it's the new turnpike. They go a different way to avoid paying the toll. Now, you'd think Swiftnick might have mentioned this before.
Yeah, fucking hell. You know, also, quite sort of Alan Partridge-type knowledge from Swiftnick, isn't it?
Yeah.
He knows about local changes that have been made to the road network.
The highways and byways.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he just mentions it now, the little prick, as they've been sat there doing nothing for a few hours. So the people are trying to avoid paying the toll, to which Dick says, that's dishonest. there's a bit of talk about some game they'd been playing with some travellers, and the traveller had a load of dice, but so did Dick's. Dick's dice was loaded as well. That doesn't come back. That's just a line.
Just a little bit
killing
of business,
time.
Yeah.
Just filling it in. And they basically just go, fuck this, there's nothing doing. Let's go and see Sam Morgan, who, of course, is the blacksmith.
Yeah.
Swiftnick doesn't know who Sam Morgan is, and Dick explains that Sam made him some circular horseshoes.
Mm.
And I was like, what, is this a euphemism? What?
Yeah.
What the fuck, circular horseshoes? And then Dick explains, circular horseshoes so they can't be tracked.
So they don't know which way the horse was fucking going.
They don't know whether they're coming or going, he says.
Like, it's just like, that's like I always say, loads of it's just based on Westerns. I bet they got that idea from a Western.
Probably.
But, yeah, so much of it is like that. I feel that there's strong... I've compared it to lots of different things. The other thing that I realise, I can't remember if we've compared it before, is that it's very... Dick Turpin is very like James Bond at times, particularly in this episode. There's a few moments where you think, this is what James Bond would be like if James Bond wasn't such a fucking prick.
I know what you mean, yeah. I know what you're referring to. Get ready to be triggered.
No, it's not just the bit with the butts and wench. There's loads of bits that you just think, this is just pure Bond. But Richard O'Sullivan, who, by the way, would have been a great Bond, does it with, like, Bond's such an uptight ponce, isn't he? With his dreary one-liners.
I honestly haven't watched a Bond film in about 25 years. So
but that's because you know
me, but,
Bond is a dickhead, right? Roger Moore Bond's sort of the only one who's passable. Because at least he's there having a fucking laugh.
I think that's when I dropped out after it was after him, was it Timothy
Dalton? Yeah.
Timothy Dalton. Lost interest then.
Yeah, very serious, very, very serious. I mean, not half as serious as fucking Daniel Craig. Jesus Christ, he's a miserable cunt. Right? There's no jokes at all. Whereas there's real charm to Dick Turpin.
We should maybe deep dive Our Friends in the North, which Daniel Craig is his big breakthrough thing. And he played Geordie. In that, didn't he? Yeah. And of course, he ended up the handsome one of the gang.
Yeah,
got all the lasses, but then he ended up being a wreck, didn't he? By the end, he had like big thick glasses and lank hair, and his teeth were a mess. He should play James Bond like that. I'd like to see that.
I did when he was first announced as Bond. Did something where when I was at Comedy Central. I remember it was a few years later. We took the audio from him playing Geordie and laid it over him as James Bond.
It was
passably funny. But Dick Turpin's much better than James Bond, that's for sure. In fact, they should have stuck this on the big screen. But just going back to them going to see Sam Morgan, like, I like this because it reminds me of being bored when you're a teenager because you're sitting around with your mate, very often in a park, and you got nothing's going on. You go, why is nothing going on? I thought that something was going to be going on. You go, nah. And then, for something to do, you just go, let's go round and see so-and-so.
Let's
and
go to another place.
That's your activity, isn't it? You go, let's go to his house. See why? See if he's in. Do you know what I mean?
Let's go to another place. Something might happen somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Just on the search for action. The almost always futile search for action.
You're on bikes, which were the modern equivalent of horses.
Horses, yeah. It's very true.
Yeah.
Bikes with round wheels. So they can't track you.
So Dick explains that Sam is also a fence for him. He says he's like a bank. He's got five coaches of stuff for me. But they get there to his workshop and Sam's not there. Of course, he's been nicked. And this fella comes down the ladder who's very circumspect about who he is.
He's a moody cunt, isn't he?
He's a moody cunt, isn't he? And he's just basically scratching around, just trying to find out where the stuff is.
Yeah.
He's realised that Sam's been nicked and he's trying to find the stuff. I don't think he's part of Spiker's...
No, he's just some cunt.
He's a vulture. He's a vulture, yeah, exactly. He's another fence. So he won't tell Dick where he is and... Dick says, if you don't tell me where Sam Morgan is, I'm going to have to kick you right around the smithy. Which is the proper word for the workshop.
Yeah.
And this mysterious fella then just fucking swings a massive metal bar at Dick's head.
Yeah. Really over the top.
It would be instant death, that, wouldn't it, if that had whacked him?
Yeah.
But Dick dodges it. A fight ensues for a few seconds. Doesn't take long. Dick's got him pinned down with his boot. And this bloke, we still don't know his name, he says, he's in the clink, Spiker took him. And Dick asks him what his part is in it, and he won't say. He says, I can guess, if I ever catch eyes on you again, your fence will be buying a grey stone. So, a threat of murder from Dick there.
Yeah. I've already kicked your head in, next time I'll kill you. Anyway, ta-da.
Yeah. So, Dick realises that Spiker hasn't found the stuff because obviously that vulture was there looking for it. So they head off to try and get Sam out of the clink, as they call it. And this is a great scene. They burst into the jailhouse, proper full gear on.
Yeah.
The tricorn hat, the face masks.
Yeah. They look so fucking cool, don't they?
It's cool as fuck, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because we don't get a lot of robbery in this.
Nah.
It's kind of getting out of scrapes and things.
Yeah, horse chases. But when they've got the full stuff on, fucking hell.
That was always
look,
the most exciting part of watching this. When you're
business.
Doing
that was my main thing. I was just always trying to dress up like that. I still would.
So the jailers are sitting around playing with dice and drinking beer. And they burst in. Dick shouts, "You, up!" to one of the men. Or to all of them, really. And he just sits down and doesn't do anything. So Dick shoots the beer bottle that's in his hand. And it shatters. This is all very exciting. And they release who we believe is Sam Morgan from the prison cell. But we'll find out more about that. Well, we'll find out more about it in the next episode because we're almost done. But what he does is he puts all the jailers into the jail and locks them in, which was very reminiscent of the Dukes of Hazzard, because that was what always seemed to happen.
They did that
Boss
every
Hogg.
Week, and Boss Hogg always fell for it. Always getting locked
Roscoe
in his own
P.
cell.
Yeah.
Once again, Boss on the little preview copy in the newspaper, once again, the Duke boys locked Boss Hogg in his own cell, then run away.
I don't know how they weren't hunted down and jailed for life, because they continually lock Boss Hogg in his own jail.
Well, that's and the same with Dick Turpin.
Let them off.
It's the same, very same as Dick Turpin. Really similar. Like, two lads live in the woods, right? The only difference is they're in America in what sort of passed for present day, and Dick Turpin was in olden times. But it was two blokes lived in a wood, and there was two cunts, either Spiker and Sir John Glutton, or in Duke's Addons, it was Boss Hogg and what's his name?
Sheriff Roscoe.
Pico Train.
Pico Train. Yeah.
Right. And they just chased the and the only sort of job of the baddies was to chase these two lads. And week after week after week after week they were confounded.
Yeah. But then sometimes they just sort of pull them over and have a bit of a chat with them and not arrest them. Even though there were still loads of outstanding offences that they'd done that they were trying to catch them for before.
That's like towards the end of The Sopranos, they there's like the FBI guy and Tony are friends. I've just finished. It's taken me a year, me and my good wife, to finish a rewatch of the whole of The Sopranos from the first episode. Last night I saw the, I know you hate this word, but iconic final episode of Sopranos. Yeah. Probably the most famous final episode of anything ever, apart from maybe Blake 7, right? And it's... But towards the end, it's the same thing where the FBI guy, who Tony kind of knows was hunting him, just comes by for a chat and a sandwich all the time with Tony. Yeah. And they just chat and exchange information, similar to what sometimes went down in Dukes of Hazzard.
The Dukes of Hazzard was like an unwritten rule. If the Duke boys escaped from the chase, the inevitable chase, that was it. It was written off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they went
until
back to square
next
one
time.
Again.
Yeah, that crime's over now. You won. But if you do another one, we start again from the beginning.
We'll chase you again.
Yeah.
We'll forget the other stuff.
Yeah.
So,
if you steal some more chickens, then get the game's back on again.
So there we are. So he puts them all in the cell, Dukes of Hazzard style, and they ride off with Sam Morgan. And we'll find out what happens once they ride off with Sam Morgan in the next one, because this is going to be a two-parter. And we'll try not to get distracted by Target. Although by next week, we might have watched some Target and we'll be raving about it even more.
Oh,
who knows? Who knows? That's the magic of Top Flight Time Machine. Thank you very much and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.